You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, let's do it. It's another edition of the AFC West Mixtape. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of ArrowheadPride.com. I'm joined by Michael Peterson, Bolts from the Blue, Bill Williamson, Silver and Black Pride, and Tim Lynch of Mile High Report. And before we get into what will be a really good show where we talk about the status updates of each and every team, our team's MVPs to this point in the season, preview the weekend of games, and talk about what the record of our teams could be heading into what will be October and then November and as we go. But I think the main theme of the AFC West right now is this idea that all four of us did it. We were smiling when we had our first episode. We said this division was going to be one of the best in NFL history. We were pretty certain about that. And I would tell you, and I think you'd all agree, that this first month of the season has been quite humbling in a sense for each and every team. Every team in this room has at least one loss. Bill still looking for the Raiders' first win here. And it has just been, and Bill, I'll go to you. It's been, I think, a humbling experience for all of us in September.
Yeah, surprising, certainly, for the Raiders. We talked about, and I was blowing this division up just as much as anybody. And, you know, it's now, what are they, a combined, what, 5-7 or something, under 500, right? But it's just kind of, look at the league. There's one undefeated team right now. We're not even, you know, just going into October. So that's why I think the Raiders can say, okay, we'll just get a win under our belts. Let's taste that victory and then just take it one week at a time. So I don't know. You know, I know this, the numbers are there, that there's only, since 1970, there's only been six teams in NFL history that started 0-3 to make the playoffs, and that's where they are, and that's the, you know, that's the mountain they are facing. But I think the Chiefs losing gives them last week gives them a little bit of a, okay, it's not so bad, you know, we're only two games out of this thing, and I, you know, so it just takes one win. Again, being 0-3 is not ideal. They're not in good shape. They have to figure out how to win, but the league is real. There's parity is what's happening right now, more than we've seen in recent years.
Bill, we'll keep it with you as we begin the first discussion here on the AFC West mixtape. And it's going to be a little bit of a game. We're going for a status update of each team. And so we're going to ask each editor to pick one word to describe their team. And since we've already begun talking about the Raiders, Bill, we'll keep it with you. What is your one word to describe where the Raiders are at right now?
I would have to say stunning. It's stunning that they're 0-3. You know, there was a report out of Pro Football Network by, you know, Aaron Wilson, who's a well-respected reporter this week, talking about their problems and saying, sources are saying, oh, maybe this is a team that just, it's the roster. I don't buy that at all. I mean, this is a team that went out and they won 10 games last year. They got Davante Adams, arguably the best wide receiver in football. They went out and got Chandler Jones, a guy that they handpicked, gave big-time guaranteed money to, who fits their system, who's played for them in the past in New England. And they gave a bunch of money to the team's core, you know, Waller and Carr and Crosby and Renfro. And he gave them a three-year deal for a three-year window here. This is they entered this season thinking they can win and thinking they have a big chance at the postseason. So I don't want to hear anything about the roster. That's why it's stunning that they're 0-3. It's didn't see it coming.
So we'll go from last to what will be first as we go through this. So the Raiders are 0-3. Michael, we'll go to you. The Chargers are 1-2. What is your one word to describe the Chargers right now?
Pain. Pain is probably the best word. So not only are Chargers fans in pain watching their phenomenal team, or at least on paper, go 1-2, get absolutely smacked by the Jaguars by a score of 38-10. A lot of the players on the Chargers are also in pain physically, probably a little bit emotionally as well. Guys like Rashawn Slater, all pro as a rookie last year, left tackle. He's out for the year with a torn bicep, lasted just 2.5 games. Joey Bosa was recently placed on IR. He's having groin surgery to replace a tear he has down there. So at least 4 weeks out, probably going to miss more time than that. Keenan Allen, their number one wide receiver, pulled up with a non-contact hamstring injury in week one, missed the Chiefs game, missed the Jaguars game. And then just as of, you know, a day or two ago, it was reported that he left practice early walking with a trainer, which probably isn't a good sign at all. And then as of today as well, him and Corey Linsley, you know, their former all-pro center, they paid big money to, just 2 years ago. Both of those players were not seen on the practice field to begin practice, the open portion, to the media. And then, like, all of that is to say, Justin Herbert is also dealing with a lot of pain. He has a fractured rib cartilage, which the only positive part of that was that it wasn't an actual rib that was fractured. It's cartilage, so it means he can play through it, but it's not something that's going to get healed during the season. Right. He's going to have to wait until offseason to have an extended period of time and rest to make sure that goes away. So he is essentially playing this entire season in some form of pain. They can do whatever they want to mitigate it. He'll have an injection every week, which is super scary in and of itself, you know, based on the history of this team, knowing that that doctor is still, unfortunately, employed by the Chargers. It's just tough. And I still haven't even mentioned J.C. Jackson. They gave $80 million to him during the offseason. He's played one game. It was against the Chiefs, and he allowed a touchdown that really swung that game in the Chiefs' favor to Justin Watson, who at the time was, correct me if I'm wrong, the fourth or fifth wide receiver on the Chiefs team. You know, it was his first game back, get his sea legs under him, but it just wasn't, unfortunately, the debut people wanted from him. And then let's not even talk about the run game. 59 yards per game on the ground, right. Worst in the NFL by, I think, at least 20 or so yards. The run game is non-existent. You can't have a balanced offense that way. And so you're putting the entire pressure of the team's success on Justin Herbert, who is already, like I said, dealing with a major injury that won't go away anytime soon. So pain really does seem to be the right word right now for the Chargers.
Just one question before we head to Tim Lynch of Mile High Report. Michael, if there's one theme that really describes the Chargers over what feels like the last half a decade to a decade, it's this injury thing. I'm wondering how frustrated is the fan base right now that this continues to happen year in and year out?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely frustrating, but at some point frustration, has to turn into like almost jadedness, almost like numbness, because at some point it happens every year. And are you going to like allow yourself, as you know, for your mental health to be upset about it and to get upset like you do, you know, every other year? Sometimes you just kind of have to let it ride and be numb to it. It's just really unfortunate. Like you said, I'd say it's the better part of a decade which that they've dealt with this type of injury history. 2018 was the last time they were in the playoffs. Before that was 2013. And the year in 2018, the only real injury they had that year was tight end Hunter Henry. They had Virgil Green as their starting tight end that whole year, but they won 12 games. They won the wild card round against the Ravens. It was a really solid year. And that's kind of what I always felt the Chargers have been, as long as they can stay somewhat healthy. Like one injury, it's what all NFL teams deal with, is fine. But when you have several injuries that kind of snowball, and then there are the team's most important players like Rashawn Slater, like Joey Bosa, that's really tough to come back from. And if you don't have the depth, then unfortunately that can really derail a season. And unfortunately it was 3 weeks until the Chargers are now dealing with this.
Right. So it's happening again. All right, let's go to Broncos country. Let's ride with Tim Lynch. Tim, what would you describe the year as so far for you?
I think the only word I could come up with was confusion. Because we, you know, a month ago we were just talking about how Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett were going to fix the offense. It's going to be an offensive team. Finally, after, you know, 7-8 years, Denver was going to have some offense again. Instead, we've got one of the best defenses in the league, and the offense is absolutely terrible. But they're winning games, so you know, I can't complain. I think at this point, it's clear that there's going to be some growing pains with Russell Wilson learning a new system with Hackett. But the luxury we have in Denver right now is we clearly have one of the best defenses in the NFL. They've given up 6 points in the second half in three games. I think they're the best second half football team on defense in the NFL, according to Football Outsiders. So they're just going to have to lean on the defense. It's not sustainable. But at this point, we're just trying to buy time. You know, they're just trying to buy time to get the offense going, get some success there, get Russell Wilson in some rhythm, because they're going to need that offense to beat teams like the Chiefs, the Chargers, and frankly, even the Raiders. I'm a bit worried about Denver facing an 0-3 team. That's never a fun thing for any team to face, because those winless teams that have a good roster tend to be a little dangerous.
Yeah, the Raiders, of course, will host the Broncos this weekend. We'll talk about that game in just a little bit here. So you have the Raiders at 0-3, the Chargers 1-2, the Broncos are 2-1, haven't looked necessarily great in their wins. The Chiefs are also 2-1, coming off a very disappointing outing against the Indianapolis Colts. They didn't really play all that well against the Chargers, but were able to get that win. Their best game was week one, but it's now been 2 weeks since that. My word for the Chiefs right now is concerned. I think similarly to Denver, I think in Kansas City, we thought the defense and how young they were would be the question. But the question has really been the offense. And there was a lot of hype in Kansas City about how the post Tyreek Hill era would be fine because of Patrick Mahomes. And if you look past Travis Kelce, none of these receivers that they brought in, be it Juju Smith-Schuster, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, you mentioned Justin Watson, the rookie in Sky Moore, no one has really stepped up to this point as being a reliable target and someone that Mahomes can go to after Kelce. And I think you're seeing them struggle because of it. This last game was marred by special teams mistakes and offensive mistakes, and the offensive line has been a concern. The Chiefs really felt that their offensive line would be a strength, and it has not been recently. The Colts were getting pressure and having Mahomes run for his life all game. And I think the big question is, In a Super Bowl or bust city, which is the Chiefs have become now after, you know, going to four straight AFC title games, I think there's a question of, is this really a Super Bowl team, a Super Bowl roster? And I think for me, I think the word is concerned, because I'm wondering if this team can actually get to that level again. And I think we all can agree, what has been interesting is we thought the AFC West would be the class of the AFC. And you have these other teams emerging, like the Jacksonville Jaguars, like the Miami Dolphins, who really do feel like playoff teams. And that means that there'll be less wild card spots for teams like maybe the Chiefs, if they're not in first place, or a Raiders team that's battling back from 0-3. And so really interesting, I think, turn of events, in a sense that we thought, okay, the AFC West is going to be the premier division, and it just has not been the case so far. And I think we all have reasons for saying that. All right, we'll move on to our next part of the discussion, and we're talking about individual players here. We'll snake back around. So we'll go back to Tim. Tim, we're talking about MVPs to this point. So of all the players on the team, which player would you credit most for this 2-1 record?
Yeah, I thought about this one for a bit, and I had to come to Bradley Chubb. You know, the Broncos selected him 5th overall ahead of Josh Allen. He hasn't really stayed healthy in his career. He had a great rookie season, but hasn't really caught on with the fans even. Like, a lot of fans, if you ask them, they're okay with just letting him walk without an extension. But he's really been the guy since Von Miller left. And when the team added Randy Gregory, those two are feeding off each other. They're really getting after the quarterback. And then you have Draymond Jones inside, who's also getting pressure. That's really what's creating the wins, is the pressure up front, getting pressure on the quarterback. It's causing turnovers. It's keeping them from the other team from sustaining drives. And I really think it's Chubb's leadership and play, of course, that's resulting in the defense really being one of the best in the league through three games. So that'd be my MVP through, you know, for the 2-1 start for the team.
Yeah, I think what's going to be interesting about this discussion and somewhere where we can probably all agree is I think we all felt like the quarterbacks would be the MVP to this point, and I don't think any of us is going to have a quarterback as an answer. Michael, we'll continue with you, and might not even be Herbert's fault. He's just been playing injured, but I can't imagine Herbert is your MVP through the first month.
Yeah, so even despite the I don't know, lesser than type play we've seen from Herbert in 3 weeks. He's dealing with an injury. Like you said, it's not necessarily his fault. I think you could still make a case for him to be the team's MVP simply because of kind of how I mentioned earlier. There is no run game. There is no rushing attack. There's nothing to help balance out the offense. There's nothing for him to lean on. The offense essentially is him if they want to be successful as of right now. But I didn't want to pick Justin Herbert no matter what case I could make for him, because I think the other guy that needs recognition is Khalil Mack. I think this was one of the best signings, or one of the best, I guess, you know, moves made this offseason to bring in a guy who, yeah, was hurt last year. A lot of people said he was washed. He was going to be too old. He's not going to be the same guy. Well, he came out in week one, which at this point, you know, it looks like a least impressive win, you know, with each week that comes. But it is their only win so far this season. He played a big part in making that happen. He had 3 sacks. Right. He had 3 tackles for loss. He had another sack against the Chiefs. That was a half sack. They turned into a full one. So he's at 4 right now. He's tied for 2nd in the league in sacks, what I think with, you know, I think 5 people. He's also tied for 2nd in the NFL with 4 tackles for loss, has a forced fumble. So he's been really kind of a cornerstone for that defense and that pass rush that really was pretty bad last year. They came into this season, obviously, with what a lot of people would probably say was the best edge rushing duo in the league in him and Bosa. Unfortunately, that duo lasted 2.5 games for Bosa's groin injury. And you kind of saw that without Bosa, Jacksonville did a very good job of mitigating Mack's rush. In week 3, he didn't have any sack, unfortunately, against Trevor Lawrence, but still has really good numbers so far this early in the season. Has not only been a good pass rusher, but he's also one of the only edge rushers, I think, joining Jalen Phillips of the Dolphins, I want to say. He's the only one to be top 10 in both pass rush win rate and run stop win rate by ESPN's metrics, which is phenomenal. I mean, I know a lot of people measure things differently, PFF to ESPN, but being in 2 different top 10s, you know, is still worthy of note. So he's been an all-around great player. And so besides the quarterback, Mack most definitely is the team's MVP so far.
I made this joke on Twitter, and this is actually the perfect place to regurgitate it here, but the Khalil Mack Bears tenure feels like very Randy Moss Raiders. Like, no one is ever really going to talk about it because he does seem to just be back now. And and it's a point, as you were making, that the Chargers won their game because of the game that he played in that game. And I think when you do have injuries, you got to rely upon your stars. So I like the Khalil Mack pick there from Michael Peterson of Bolts from the Blue. Bill, we'll continue with you. Again, not too much to be happy about right now with the winless Raiders, but who has been your best player?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing to pick an MVP at an 0-3 team, right? But it's easy just to say the best player. And same theme here, you know, pass rusher, Max Crosby. He has been their best player. You would think Devontae Adams should be their best player, but the offense is having its issues, and I can't go there. So, Crosby, the thing about Crosby is he's a really underrated player. I know he made the Pro Bowl last year, and he was Pro Bowl defensive MVP, whatever that means. So he's a known player, but I don't think he gets enough credit. I think this guy is legit top 10 defensive player, no matter, you know, any layer of the defense. He's never been a real sack guy, but he's a huge pressure guy. He does have 2 sacks in 3 games, and that's better than – I mean, he's on a nice pace here, but he's – always has pressure. He led the NFL in pressures last year, and he's become a really good run stopper. And it's just an incredible player who was a 4th-round pick. And I know the previous regime, McGruden and Mayock, get a lot of crap, and they've earned it for their bad drafting. But this guy was a gem, and he's just a motor guy, and he's tremendous.
Yeah, a lot of people are in Kansas City hoping that George Karlaftis, their 1st-round pick, ends up being similar to what Crosby is doing in Vegas. When I get to the Chiefs MVP, it's funny, right? Because, you know, you talk about the quarterbacks, and this division has such talented quarterbacks, and Patrick Mahomes is widely regarded among the elites. But I can't give it to Mahomes. I feel like he is struggling a little bit to gel with this offensive line. I'd mentioned that. Aside from the first game where he was magnificent and won AFC Player of the Week, he was a little bit more, I think, mundane in the following 2 games, and he really hasn't been someone that has propelled the Chiefs. It's been more their defense. I was going to pick Chris Jones, but then everyone and their mother saw what Chris Jones did on Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, he's played really well, but how could you give him the MVP when he cost the Chiefs the game by saying whatever he did to Matt Ryan and drawing a flag? And that was one of the many reasons they lost against the Colts. Travis Kelce's been another good player, but he dropped a touchdown in the end zone that would have beat the Indianapolis Colts. So lesser known name, I think, for people nationally. But for me, this MVP has been Nick Bolton, and he's the Mike linebacker for the Chiefs. He has the green dot. He calls the defenses, and the Chiefs lost Anthony Hitchens this past offseason, and Bolton has really stepped into that position. We know about the suspension to Willie Gay Jr., suspended last game. He'll be suspended for another three games stemming from an arrest that happened in January, and he's been able to, I think, bring his replacement in Darius Harris, the weak side linebacker. He's been able to bring him along. Bolton has 22 tackles. He leads the team. He led the team last year. He had two sacks. He had what should have been the game-clinching sack against the Indianapolis Colts before Chris Jones did what he did. But I just think Bolton has propelled the defense and these younger players to play well. Jalen Watson is a defensive back that has come out of the seventh round and he's played really well. And I just think the communication has been there. And for the team's top unit, I think Bolton has been their best player. And so for me, I think he gets the MVP for right now. And we'll see if October maybe brings us some more offensive MVPs, because if you noticed, all four of the MVPs were defense. And man, to think about that going into the season, we would have all called each other crazy. Like, what do you mean? It's not Justin Herbert or Mahomes or Devontae Adams or what would be Russ Wilson. And it's just, hey, that's why they play the games. It's another cliche that we always use, but I think it's relevant here.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, let's get into our next part of the podcast, the AFC West Mixtape Episode 2. We're going to preview the weekend, and we'll start here because it's our only AFC West matchup, and I'll go back to you, Tim. You talked about the game a little bit already, the Broncos playing the winless Raiders. What is your prevailing thought heading into this weekend?
My prevailing thought as a fan is this is a must-win game against Josh McDaniels more than anything. I hate the Raiders, but you know, his tenure in Denver was so toxic. Fans universally do not like the man. So to lose to McDaniels, see his smug face, being all happy, it'd be brutal. It'd kill me. But the problem is the Raiders are 0-3 and they're desperate. You know, like you said, they won 10 games last year, went to the playoffs. This is not a bad team. I believe they had a players only meeting. You know, that's kind of a mixed bag sometimes in terms of, you know, whether or not it does anything. But I'm worried, and I'd hate for the Broncos to lose a game here, but I haven't seen anything from their offense to really give me much hope. They've actually regressed since the start of the season. I think they had 1-3 and out heading into last week, and now they're top five in the NFL in 3 and outs. I think they had like 8 of them last week alone. So, you know, there's a lot of concerns there. I know they're going to work through it. They're going to keep grinding. But at some point, the defense isn't going to be able to keep up its historic, you know, 2.2 points per half, second half. You know, like that's just, it's not sustainable. Eventually, they're going to give up a touchdown in the second half. And in the games that they've been in so far, that's an L, you know. So, and the Raiders are going to come in desperate. I'm not liking this game. I'm going to hope for a win, but I would not be surprised at all if the Raiders get their first win of the season and then have Broncos fans just freak out that their season's now over because they lost to the Raiders on the road.
Tim, what do you think the biggest problem has been with the offense? Because you watch these games closer than any of us and any of the fans certainly around the division so far.
I think it's just Russell Wilson's not comfortable with what he's seeing. You know, being in a new system, learning all the plays, being able to anticipate where players are going to be, that kind of chemistry, it'll come. I don't see anything like comparing it to like last year or the year before with Drew Lock. You know, the issue there was you didn't have a good quarterback. Russell Wilson is a good quarterback. He's just not comfortable yet, and he doesn't want to just throw the ball up and YOLO it, get intercepted. So he's taking the nice safe plays, you know, and it's just not, that's not his game, you know. Russell Wilson's a deep ball guy. So I think it'll come. I just don't think it's going to come by Sunday, so that's why I'm worried about the Raiders, because at some point the Raiders are gonna get it together, even in spite of their head coach.
Bill, let's go to you. This is the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, wasn't last week the season, you know?
every week it seems like right now.
That's what we're talking about in Tennessee, 2-0-2 teams, two teams that made the playoffs last year and started 0-2, and that was the theme. So we gotta admit that this is already desperate times. And but again, the division's wide open, so the Raiders aren't feeling out of it. But yeah, the winning has to start. And this is a team that's interesting. This is the third straight week they're a favorite. They have not played tough teams. This isn't one of those things where you say, okay, well, once the season, the schedule eases up, the three teams that they've lost to are 0-2 in their other games. And those teams have lost those games by a combined average of 16 points. So the Raiders aren't playing the league's killer. So they have to figure it out for themselves. And I think it's really going to come down to the Raiders' offense against the Broncos' defense, because of the four of the primary, you know, positions, units, the Raiders' offense and defense haven't been good. And as Tim said, the Broncos' offense hasn't been good, but the Broncos' defense has. So that's the key. The Raiders are going to have to figure it out against that defense. And it's going to be really interesting in the red zone as well. The Raiders have struggled both offensively and defensively in the red zone. The Broncos have struggled offensively in the red zone. So something's going to have to give. And I'm really going to think it's going to come down to when the Raiders have the ball. Can they score and figure it out?
Yeah.
I expect losses. Another close game. A low scoring close game.
The losses for the Raiders have come against the Chargers, the Cardinals, and the Tennessee Titans. And that's a big game, because I think you're looking at two teams that are really searching for their identity. And as far as who wins, I mean, that team is going to be feeling, either in the Raiders case, I feel like the Raiders will come out and be saying, look, we can get something going now. We got a division win. It's all in front of us. The Chiefs have a loss. So, you know, so too to the Broncos, and that would be their second loss as well. And then Denver, I think in beating the Raiders, sure, it hasn't been pretty, but then you're coming out of that game, you're 3-1, and you got to be feeling pretty good about your outlook at there. All right, let's go around the AFC West and continue with the Chargers. They'll be heading to Houston to take on the Texans. Michael, what is your take on this game?
Well, before last week, I would have said that this was going to be a cakewalk. Leading up to the Jaguars game, I said that was the start of the Chargers' soft part of their schedule because I thought the second half of their schedule looked really tough, and I felt they needed to come away from the first 2 weeks splitting the AFC West games and then kind of essentially doing their best to win out until the bye week to take advantage of a little bit of that cushion prior to that tough second half of their schedule. But after the Chargers, you know, got their tail handed to them by the Jaguars, I'm not looking at any game as easy. I'm not looking at any game as or any opponents soft anymore, just because, like, we've come to learn the NFL is unpredictable. You just never know what's going to happen. But I'll tell you one thing about this game. Between these two teams, I'm calling this matchup a stoppable force meets a movable object. And that's because the Chargers right now, I think I said it earlier, but they average a league low 59 yards per game on the ground, while the Houston run defense averages allowing 202.3 yards per game on the ground. Now, you look at those numbers and you're like, something's got to give. Are the Chargers going to finally figure it out with Austin Eckler and company? Or is Houston going to figure out how to finally, like, shut the door on a ground game? So that's going to be really interesting to see. One of the big things going into this matchup is that Rashawn Slater is out. So the Chargers did have to figure out their plan B at left tackle. Well, instead of trotting out Storm Norton again, who had 8 pressures allowed in one half against the Jaguars a week ago, they finally learned their lesson on Norton and are going to try Jamari Sawyer, a rookie, 6th-round rookie out of Georgia, out there at left tackle. He's been a guard essentially since before he was drafted. He was training to be a guard in the NFL. He's been a left guard specifically through OTAs and training camp and up to this point. But he did start for the Georgia Bulldogs last year en route to helping them to the national title. So he's got experience and comfort and familiarity out on the blind side. And so the Chargers felt that just saying right away before the week even really got underway that Sawyer's going to start at left tackle, and we're hopefully that's going to help mitigate the damage from Slater's absence. I'm not sure what to expect in this game overall. I think it's going to be low scoring unless offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi kind of figures out his own problems. Twice so far after games, week one and then following the Jaguars game, Joe Lombardi has essentially come out and said, you know, he got either too conservative or he wasn't really pushing the gas as much as he could, or he was playing more not to lose than to win. Against the Raiders, that second half was very much run pass, tried to hold on to that lead, and you saw how close the Raiders were able to kind of push there at the end. And then to begin the game against the Jaguars, and yeah, Justin Herbert has his rib injury, but right away, I mean, besides just the frequent three and outs, and then they also had back-to-back drives with a fumble and an interception, he said that I played too conservative. You know, I was worried about Justin Herbert, and it really hurt our momentum to begin that game. So that's not a good sign either. Joe Lombardi, the rhetoric on him, whether he's the right guy for Herbert, has kind of gone back and forth, but he himself has at least shown the acknowledgement to say that, hey, I can do better. And he said, quote, like, it's not going to happen going forward. So hopefully in this game, we do see a little more vintage Justin Herbert, because I don't think this offense and this team in general is going to succeed without it. I recently was looking up some stats real quick and just kind of put this into perspective. Tua and Joe Burrow are having good seasons, individual seasons, where they're throwing for tons of yards. Tua's throwing to the number one and two wide receivers in terms of yardage in the NFL. Joe Burrow's throwing to the fourth and sixth best receivers in terms of yardage in the NFL. And Justin Herbert's best two top receivers are both tied for 45th in yards. I mean, the discrepancy is absolutely huge. It just paints a picture of, you know, if Justin Herbert is who he is with a pop gun for an arm, right, he needs to be throwing it downfield. And so far, they just haven't been doing that, whether that's the offensive line or something else or Joe Lombardi. Yeah. They need to figure this out, and hopefully they're able to do that against a defense of Houston that doesn't look to be all that solid.
Well, it is, I think, desperation mode a little bit for the Chargers here. I mean, we mentioned the Raiders are winless. You can't go 1-3 and expect to be able to compete in this division, especially if the Chiefs are able to win on Sunday night, which isn't a given, and kind of gets me into my preview here. The biggest story heading into Chiefs and Bucks on Sunday night football isn't really Mahomes and Brady, which I find weird. I mean, I think around the league, as we get closer to the game on Sunday and things end, I think it'll get a little bit more juice. But I just don't think these two quarterbacks, who, you know, are looked at as some of the better quarterbacks in the league, certainly Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, I just don't think they're playing well right now. And I think that because of that, I think the matchup has lost a little bit of juice. I think this game for Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is going to really come down to offensive line play. Shaq Barrett was asked about the Super Bowl, where the Chiefs were decimated as far as the offensive line goes, and he was asked about how much stronger this Chiefs offensive line is, and he laughed into the Zoom camera. Shaq Barrett laughed into the Zoom camera, asked the Chiefs about it this week. They really didn't feed into and give them any kind of line as far as back and forth, and so I think they should take that very personally and play better. As I mentioned, against Indianapolis, Patrick Mahomes was running for his life in a sense. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have faced offensive line problems themselves, and Tom Brady has had to get the ball out even faster for them to even operate. But I think, you know, we always talk about the trenches. I think whoever plays better offensive line wise will win this football game. And I think the strengths of these teams right now isn't Mahomes. It isn't Brady. It's the defenses. And so who is going to play a little bit better as far as offense? Will it be Mahomes or Brady, and sort of break through in a sense? Because Mahomes really hasn't looked the same, as I said, since week one. Tom Brady doesn't look like he's having any fun at all. So can he start having fun? And we mentioned as far as the records around the division and how these games can really swing, but the Bucs and Chiefs heading into the season were considered still Super Bowl contenders. One of these teams is going to be 3-1 and the other one is going to be 2-2 and sort of looking inward and saying to themselves, you know, are we really that? And so I think that's what it comes down to. It's an early measuring stick of, are you really one of these Super Bowl teams? Because if you lose this game and you're 2-2 and you got a tough stretch ahead, maybe you're not the Super Bowl contender that you thought you were. All right, so we have the game previews done. We talked about the MVPs. We talked about our status updates and our one word for the team right now. Now, we do this once a month, the last Friday of every month. So right now it's September 30th. We'll be checking back in with you on what will be October 28th. In the meantime, we will have about three or four games. Some of us have a bye week in there. I believe the Raiders will have a bye week before that. And so we're going to go quickly around the room, and I'll read off the games that we have ahead before the next time that we meet here on the AFC West mixtape. And Bill, we'll start with you. I mentioned that you guys have the bye, but you of course play the Broncos, then at Kansas City for Monday Night Football, bye week, and the Texans. So it's the Broncos, the Chiefs, and then the Texans. What's the record of the Raiders coming out of that?
Let's be a little positive, optimistic, I guess, and say 2-4. That's not great at all. You know, I think this team would have hoped to have been 4-2, 3-3 at worst. But hey, it is what it is at this point. You're 0-3. And if they can win 2 out of 3, they'll feel pretty okay with themselves. You know, I would, if I had to guess, they lose to the Chiefs and then beat the two other teams. But this is a huge one. This sets up everything. This game, because if they fall 0-4, then you just forget about everything. You know, it's a real hard sell inside that building, especially going to Kansas City on a Monday night. So this is really the jumping off game for the rest of the season. It's saving the season. But again, this isn't a horrible team. This team doesn't know how to win yet. They're gonna have to figure that out. But yeah, let's say they beat the Broncos and the Texans and go 2-4 next time we talk.
Okay, so 2-4 for the Raiders. That's your prediction. We'll check back when we get to October 28th. I'm sure life will look a lot different then. We'll flip it and go back to the Broncos. So the Broncos' next stretch, they have four games, will be at Vegas. We talked about that game versus the Colts at LA, and then against the New York Jets. Tim, what do you expect over the next stretch?
I'm kind of hoping the Broncos face some adversity where they're down a couple of scores, because I'd like to see what Russell Wilson does when you know, the burden of playing within the system is removed and they just need to go try to find a way to win. Maybe that happens this week, but I'm still feeling reasonably optimistic. I'm gonna say they're gonna come out of here 5-2. I think they handle Matt Ryan and whoever the quarterback of the Jets is by then. You know, so it's just the two divisional games on the road. If they can just get one of those, then, you know, they're going to be sitting pretty heading into the second half of the season. And that's where I hope they're at.
Yeah, 5-2 would give the Broncos a real shot of winning the AFC West, and we'll see what the Chiefs' record is at that point. But who knows? 5-2 may be good for first with the way that the Chiefs' offense is playing. So we will see what happens to the Broncos. Again, they are visiting Vegas. They got the Colts at home, visiting L.A., and then against the New York Jets. And we think Zach Wilson will be the quarterback, but it does remain to be seen by the time we get there 4 weeks from now. All right, Michael, let's go to you. So here's the Chargers' next few games. We talked about them visiting the Texans. Then it's at Cleveland against the Broncos and then against the Seahawks at home. How did they do over the next stretch?
So I'm going to learn from previous mistakes of feeling as confident as I was before. And I'm going to do a little bit of reverse psychology here. It's nothing crazy, okay, but I'm going to say they go 2-2 over the next stretch. And when we meet again, they will be a 3-4 team. I'm not super confident in the Cleveland matchup. I think without Joey Bosa having a bookend to help stop the run, I think that's a game where they could literally just say, Nick Chubb, run right, and you are going to run over Chris Rumpf, who is going to be the edge guy over there. And Chris Rumpf had to bulk up quite a bit coming out of college. He's in his second year out of Duke, but he was about 235 pounds as a rookie. I don't see him being able to kind of hold up that edge as well. And I think that's just going to be a game dominated by the Browns running game. The other loss I have is actually to the Broncos. I am not super confident in that matchup either. AFC West games are always a dogfight, and the Broncos, no matter how good or bad they've been playing, it's always a tough fight. And usually when the Broncos aren't looking too good, that's when they kind of sneak up and take one from the Chargers. Even though they're 2-1, they don't necessarily look like a true 2-1 team. So I think, again, this might be a game where they come up and they may even win pretty well, by a few scores here. I'm trying to use some reverse psychology here. And then there are two W's I have them winning this week. I just think that if they were to lose the Texans for the second straight year, and not only just that, but to this type of Texans team where like everyone's kind of had them counted out, they don't have a win this season as well. They're 0-2-1. If they don't win this game, I think heads roll. I think something crazy happens at the front office. Moves will have to be made. I think it just forces that type of situation. And then I have them beating Seattle. I just think they can take advantage of an offensive line that's been better than I think advertised, but it's still Geno Smith playing quarterback. I think they take advantage of a team that isn't, you know, your father's Seahawks, and come out with 2 wins, 2 losses. So yeah, a 3-4 record by the time we meet up again.
Michael, do you think this head coach and GM make it out of the season?
If I had to take any guesses about someone not being here next year, I will say Tom Telesco is not the general manager of the Chargers before Brandon Staley gets fired. I don't think the Chargers like getting rid of head coaches all that quickly. And I think if you were to allow Tom Telesco basically to hire his fourth head coach in a 10-year span, then something's still going wrong. So I think at this point, Tom Telesco has had enough of a leash, has done enough attempts to, you know, get this franchise where it needs to be. I do believe in Brandon Staley for what it's worth. I think he is the guy. I think maybe some of the guys around him aren't correct, but I think he knows where to take this team. Even if something doesn't happen this year, of course, they've already got the injury excuse. But if anyone's going to be gone next year, I think it would be Tom Telesco prior to Brandon Staley.
Okay, so that's a good run through of the Chargers' next couple games and the outlook when it comes to the front office. The Chiefs visit Tampa. We talked about that. They host the Raiders on Monday Night Football. Speaking of a game that will get a lot of hype, I believe, is a home matchup with the Buffalo Bills. I think a lot of people will have eyeballs in that game. And then against the San Francisco 49ers to wrap up the four-game stretch. I have them, and I don't feel good about it, but I'm just trying to take a stab here and throw a dart. I have them at 3-1. I could easily see them being 2-2 or perhaps worse. They're just not playing that well right now. But I've seen Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid figure it out too many times to think that this sort of skid is going to turn into 3 or 4 games. I have a win against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I really don't think that Shaq Barrett should have awoken a sleeping giant in the Chiefs OL that really hasn't been playing well. And I think they know that they can play better. And I feel like they will on Sunday night, especially with that added motivation. Can't pick a Raiders team that's winless against the Chiefs at home on a Monday night. I just can't do it. I feel like the Chiefs will have the ultimate advantage in that game. And the Raiders have had wins here and there over the years against the Chiefs, but I just can't see it being that one. Gave them a loss against the Buffalo Bills. I know the Bills slipped up last week, but I think largely, and if I'm looking at all these games, I think the Bills have just looked better than the Chiefs have, generally speaking, this year. So I'll give them a loss against the Buffalo Bills. And I can't see Jimmy Garoppolo coming into Arrowhead Stadium and winning a game against Patrick Mahomes again. So a very cautious, I almost feel like I might be making a mistake when I say 3-1. But if the, let's say the Chiefs are 2-1 now. So if that were to happen, they would be 5-2. And if Tim's prediction were to come true, then the Chiefs and Broncos at that point would be 5-2 ahead of the division. So that is interesting. We I think, learned the hard way. And the general theme of this episode was that it's hard to win in the NFL. And maybe this division isn't as good as we thought it was. We got that division matchup coming up this week, the Broncos taking on the Raiders, which we'll see who comes and is victorious in that one. So we hope you enjoyed the show. For Bill Williamson of Silver and Black Pride, for Tim Lynch of Mile High Report, for Michael Peterson of Bolts from the Blue, I'm Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride. We will be back with you 3 or 4 weeks from now, October 28th on Friday, for the next episode of the AFC West Mixtape. Thank you for joining us.